Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave Solomon. Yay! When in doubt of any kind, just say, yay! It's been a week. How's your week been? I hope it's just going dandy. It's a very tricky life sometimes to navigate through the ins and outs and challenges and victories, isn't it? But thank God we have music. Woo! And what music for you today? Even though today, I must tell you, is going to be somewhat abbreviated. And here's why. Speaking of those said tricky navigational situations, Mama Bear here forgot that there was a deadline to be met as far as car emissions are concerned. Got the times a little bit askew, so I have to beat feet after our interview today with Ronnie Smith and go take care of business cross town. I'll make it up to you next Tuesday, but it's going to be a two-hour show, hopefully. Ronnie will be here next hour, at the top of next hour. And in the meantime, Gloriosity, great music. Honestly, I'm going to celebrate a couple of folks that are going to be at the Capitol Jazz Fest this weekend, and that'll all be coming up this hour. Some surprises as well. Mm-hmm. We start off with a classic each and every time that we do this, as far as the music is concerned. If a guest takes precedence, that's a different story. Let's do one of the inspirations that Ronnie Smith declares was one of his. So many have claimed the same. This is Wes Montgomery from the 60s on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz.
Thank you. me, are you going through changes? Time seems like it's passing by. Just believe that love will find a way. I see the tears you cry. I see the pain.
Oh, baby, do you promise that love will find a way? Lionel, tell me the truth now. Look right at me and tell me. Oh, my. Lionel Richie, I am just so excited to be able to play that man's song for you right there, not just because it's fabulous from 1983, if you can believe it, 1983 from Can't Slow Down, which is, oddly, the name of the album by Ronnie Smith, who will be here at the top of next hour. I know that Ronnie's got to be aware of that. He probably just forgot. Can't Slow Down. Lionel apparently has taken that little phrase to a new level. For a while, truthfully, I was concerned because I didn't see anything happening on his website. And I said to my son, geez, I hope he's not sick. I hope he's not pulling back. Maybe he was a little bit baffled by the reaction from Tuskegee. I don't know. But in the past couple of days, what did I see? I went to his page on Facebook, and there it is in big, bold letters, which is on my Facebook page now, that Lionel's going to be on the Today Show tomorrow morning. Oh, my gosh. And then I go to his website. It's completely revamped. Oh, Lord. It's like a whole new world. He's got dates. He's going to be in Europe. He's going to be with Jennifer Lopez on the 14th of July, this huge London Hyde Park gathering, big summer in the park kind of situation. And I'm just floored. So I got a little smart arsy yesterday and Twittered because folks on the staff wanted to know if you had any questions for Lionel come tomorrow morning on the Today Show. So I figured if you don't ask, you don't know, right? So I asked him to marry me. Because, look, he could say yes. He could say no, but then he could say yes. You just have to put it out there. So he probably thinks, oh, geez, here's another stalker. So if you go to his website, hopefully they will approve a comment that yours truly made about having Lionel come to the show. It would just be awesome if he spent a little time here talking about his music. Look, all of his music or selected songs and the people that inspired him to go forward, wouldn't that be cool? Doesn't hurt to ask. Lionel Richie, Love Will Find a Way. Corinthia Cromwell on saxophone and Cyrus Chestnut on piano right before that. Our friend Kristen Callahan was here on Tuesday. She talked about Nature Boy. That's going to be on her album, One Magic Day. This is the instrumental version of that. And wasn't that lovely? Just sax and piano. Corinthia Cromwell, Evolution Band from 2011. And actually, that was from the CD, Peace of Mind Outside the Lines. If you want to see a cool interview with Kristen, go to jazzcorner.com. Just found this morning. She's talking about one of her inspirations, talking about Lionel's, Charlie Parker, and how she studied him and wanted to get some of what he had mined down and then expand from there. Just so beautiful when somebody is able to take an influence and seemingly memorize because they're mesmerized, and then create a whole new kind of pathway from that main influence. I love that. Wes Montgomery has done his share, God knows. Recorded live in June of 1965, and then in September of the same year, Unit 7, one of the big jazz classics from the past several decades, from Smokin' at the Half Note, a club in New York City at the time. Holy cow, is that considered one of the end-all and be-alls as far as jazz projects are concerned. Wes doing his superlative guitar thing with essentially Miles Davis, the rhythm section, from 1959 to 1963. Jimmy Cobb and Paul Chambers and Wynton Kelly on piano. Whew. Such good music. And I play Wes Montgomery specifically because that's one of the main ideas why our guest, Ronnie Smith, wanted to play guitar, hungered to play guitar, and we'll talk about that when he's here at the top of next hour, which is less than 40 minutes away. Wanted to play some more songs, especially from my friend Beach. BJ White has been with me at the beginning of Hybrid Jazz since August of 2011 when we started. She has been here almost every single show. Now, because the workforce is opening up, she's got a new job. She's going to start back at some work on Monday. Of course we wish her well, but we're going to really miss her a lot. Don't want to even think about it. So I promised a little medley of songs that I thought that she would particularly love. And now I have to hold the phone because I don't have the Skype. It's not going well at this juncture, but it will. But I had to hold the phone momentarily so we could get to our first song. So these three are directly for you, Beach, half of my Brides of Funkenstein. Love you, and I know that your world will be full of music. You will be listening in the archives. You will be seeing East Bay Soul this weekend at Spagatini's in Seal Beach. Yes, one of these days, you and Griselda and me, several others, will be there in person to support EBS. In the meantime, let's just gravitate to the good stuff. David Sanborn and Joey DeFrancesco, The Peeper on Hybrid Jazz. Thank you. mercy, he knows all about the devil. Woo! Daryl Walker on lead vocals there. And honestly, you know, I think it's just amazing that whatever the circumstances were for Greg Adams and Daryl Walker to find each other, oh my God, there was some sort of reverse devil action going on. That was a heavenly anointing there, because here is Greg with all of that musical history behind him, with Tower of Power, solo career, all his production situations, and there have been some of the most astounding circumstances in the world pertaining to Greg. And then he meets Daryl Walker. Now, I'm not sure how old of a person Daryl is. I wouldn't even guess, doesn't matter. But he is such a throwback to what was the hottest vocal, what's the word I'm looking for? People were drawn to voices back in the 60s in a way that is not happening now, because we quite frankly don't have them. But in the 60s, as far as Motown was concerned, and the pockets of Philly that were turning out these beautiful voices that were getting some kind of recognition, even the folks who weren't getting international publicity, you heard some of these voices and time stopped. And here is Daryl Fitzgerald Walker, and he's got that. When some of us hear his voice, nothing else is happening in the room. It's just a freeze frame in time, because you are transported back decades. And he has never heard me say that, and I know he's going to get weepy when he hears it, because maybe that's what he was aiming for. But even if he wasn't sure of that goal or even had that kind of a goal in mind, he is a transportational vocalist. In many ways, that makes no sense, but you get what I'm talking about. He's just amazing. The Devil, you know, from East Bay Soul 2.0. Got to tell you this. This is something real exciting. Now, you know, of course, because Kim from the Potomac Jazz and Seafood Festival was here a couple of weeks ago, and Greg Adams was here, too, with Kim. That was very exciting. So I'm guessing that most of the tickets are sold by now for the July 13th big event with the headliners of East Bay Soul. So that weekend is really big for EBS, because the next day they're going to be going to Lancaster, PA. Now, I knew that, but I didn't know circumstances. The place is called Long's Park, and it's very cool. This morning I find out that it's less than an hour and a half away from where we live. Holy camoli. So we are going to get some Philly friends and some folks from the Baltimore area and take a caravan up there. It's a blast. It's like this family park, and you get to see these mad entertaining groups or acts just out in the open. Oh, it's just going to be so much fun. So there you go. And they're going to be, my God, they're so busy. Spaghettini's, that's tomorrow and Saturday in Seal Beach. Beach, make sure that you know folks there knew I was plugging them, all right? And then they're going to be at the Soil Dove in Denver next many days. So all you have to do is check out eastbaysoul.com and find out more. All right, now, time is getting to be of the essence. Chuck Loeb, along with Pat Bianchi and company, but those are the two guys I'm focusing on, from Plain and Simple from a few years ago, The Blues App. Is that a smoking song? Lord, have mercy. Ah, Pat Bianchi on that Hammond B. Oh, so nice. Just had to play that for my friend Beej. Last day is today. Going to go to work on Monday. We also heard David Sanborn along with Joey DeFrancesco, also working the organ, thanks. And Steve Gadd on drums. Woo, from Only Everything from 2010. David Sanborn, going to be 68 next month, touring to beat the band along with Bob James, because they've got a new album out together. And they're going to be at Cap Jazz this Sunday in Columbia, Maryland. Now, they're probably going to dip into a few songs from the new CD, but maybe a couple of things from Only Everything, which is the second homage project to Ray Charles. The first one was Here and Gone from 2008, just so you know. We didn't mention that Lionel Richie is also going to be celebrating a birthday on June 20th. That's the best-looking 64 you'll ever see, baby. Ow! So hot. He can't help himself. Man, I'm surrounded by hot men. Let's go on, shall we? I'm going to play a couple of songs before we get to Ronnie Smith at the top of next hour. Looking forward to this. Looking forward to this little song here. Love it. Not the latest from Claire Daly and company, but something that just feels right to play. Another song for BJ. This is called Guidance from the Mary Joyce Project, Nothing to Lose, followed by Gretchen Parlato. Something to look forward to. And then something by Ronnie Smith on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Here we go. This is Hybrid Jazz.
Thank you.
something. When I got a hold of Can't Stop Now by our guest, Ronnie Smith, that was the first song. It's the first song on the CD. And I went, wait, we can stop right here because this is such a cool jam. I just love the vibe of that. I love the joy of that. And let us not waste any more time. What you just heard is Lift Off. Beautiful song to start a project. This gentleman is a little different than what we have had in the way of guitar players and composers, because Ronnie Smith is also an educator and also a soldier musician. He's been doing his thing for the service of our country for over 30 years. He's just full of music. He's a Baltimore hometown hero, and without further ado, this is Ronnie Smith. Hey, sir, how are you?
Good, Trish. How are you?
I am so good. I am so glad that we connected via my AOL account. Thank you so much for reaching out, because this music is just absolutely delightful, Ronnie. Can I just say?
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Man.
Glad you enjoy it, and I'm hoping that others will enjoy it as well.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that, because it's just so nice to be able to listen to every track, and I have done that three different times now. There's 10 tracks, and honestly, my son can back me up on this. This morning I thought, all right, what am I going to do? I have to get three songs. I have to get them in working order. Now, which am I going to choose? So today I allowed myself the three that stood out most. Next time, Ronnie, I'm going to hear the album. It will be three more. So that's the power and beauty of each of these songs.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm curious, what songs did you pick?
Well, if you don't want me to keep them as a surprise, this time around, I really, and it was the first reaction, too, when I first heard the CD. I love Lift Off. But today, Brown Town just hit me right where I live.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. Man, that is just so funky. And sometimes you get funky, and sometimes you lay back and let the groove take over and get romantic, as in Valentine. And
oh, cool.
Then you pull out the jams, and, of course, that's the last track, and we're certainly going to hear that, too. Woo! So
Okay. You
got all four cylinders burning and grooving with this CD.
Thanks a lot.
And how long did it take for your journey? I mean, you started out young. Give us the beginnings of Ronnie Smith and how you got attached to that guitar.
Oh, that goes back to, I guess, junior high or a little bit sooner. I actually started off playing clarinet, but and even I still play clarinet or the woodwind family today, but I just didn't feel like I was good on that instrument itself. I still don't feel like I have the hang of it. But I guess I can hold my own, I guess I'll say, on it. But I really enjoyed the guitar a lot. I think the first guitar I got, that goes back so many years.
Yeah.
I'm going to say as far back as I can remember is like junior high or something to that extent, where we had in school a jazz band. And so, you know, actually, even further back, my cousin actually played guitar, and I used to love watching him play guitar, and I used to go to him and say, can you teach me something? Can you teach me something? And actually, he showed me how to play one chord, and that took forever because my muscles weren't used to playing, or, you know, my fingers on a fingerboard for the guitar, so that took forever just to learn that one chord, to get, you know, the muscles going and pressing down little skinny strings, metal strings, and really it was a hurtful experience to if I think back at it. Those little metal things causing calluses on the tip of your finger. But, yeah, so I went back that far, and I kind of, like, just took to it ever since then. And I remember I lost my first guitar. I came home from school, and I left it on my front porch.
Oh, and, Ronnie.
And it was gone. So I remember my father said, well, if you want to play another, because they bought it. And it's like, you want to play that instrument, you're going to have to get one yourself. Because I was just, you know, negligent. Just not, you know, too many things going on. I want to go outside and play baseball, football, whatever. And that actually started the journey. I ended up getting a little small job, bought a guitar, went from that one guitar to quite a few other guitars after that. But that started the journey through high school, through college, and then I actually left my senior year from University of Maryland. I was actually studying classical guitar during that period, and I met the jazz professor at University of Maryland, and he said, do you really want to be a classical guitarist? I was like, not really. I can't be, you know, feeding the family off of this. So, you know, I think I was okay, but I don't think I would have been playing with the VSO as a guitarist, classical guitarist. But just enough to make it to school, I was fine. He said, well, he played for the Commodores as a guest soloist from time to time.
Wow.
He said, well, why don't you take an audition, you know, in the Army band system? Okay, I'll give it a shot. And I took the audition. They said, oh, you're good to go. I don't know if they just needed, you know, bodies at the time. But no, I actually passed the audition, did pretty well. And that started the military music thing. I went to the school, Army Navy School of Music, and straight from there went to Europe and just started playing, and I'm going to call it the commercial side of music. It was big band, you know, then you had different combos, rock combos, jazz combos, that sort of thing.
So I
ended up liking it so much, 30 years or so passed, I'm still doing it.
Oh, but isn't that amazing? Oh, my gosh. That's really a big, fat blessing, Ronnie, that you're able to do that because, whew, once you're involved in a military capacity, first of all, nobody really ever talks about this, but besides the fact that you're serving the country, you always feel as if you'll be taken care of. And then on top of that, you get to see places that others never do. So you've got all this experience amassed in your playing. And you can't help but get affected if you go to different places. Then that becomes a part of your playing.
It does. It really does because, you know, the places that I've visited, you know, out of the country, I've had an opportunity to, you know, go to Europe, go to places like Bolivia, and I would always search out the guitarist there.
Yes.
And each place that I've gone to, I've really seen some phenomenal guitarists, and I would always go up to them and say, hey, can you show me something? You know, that sort of thing. So it didn't matter, you know, where I went, whether it was here in the States, Philadelphia. I had a chance to meet Pat Martino.
Asked him the same thing.
Pat, can you show me a couple of things? Sure, come on, Q-House. You know, that sort of thing. As well as, like I said, guitars in Spain. It didn't matter. I was so intrigued with the instrument itself that I went on a mission pretty much to learn, you know, as much as I could. And matter of fact, I'm still doing the same thing because there's so many talented players out there, and young, old, it doesn't matter. It, you know, it doesn't have an age limit. Those who have the knack for it and are able to do certain things that I'm interested in, I have no problem in asking.
And you know what? That's what makes you a guitarist that I really have enjoyed listening to with this CD, especially because you can always tell when somebody has chosen to always be a student and not so much the teacher. You can just tell the joy in playing. You know who else was like that? And I played him earlier. It was the first song I played, Wes Montgomery.
Wow.
I know that he influenced you, and I happened to stumble across Unit 7 from Smokin' at the Half Note back in 65. Mm-hmm. And I knew just from the background of Wes Montgomery, he was always like that. He loved to listen to other people, and he loved to incorporate the sounds around him and the influences around him into his music. He never thought that he had it all together. He loved to share the music. He loved to share the stage, and he was always listening as opposed to, here I am, don't you know who I am? You know?
Yeah. To me, that kind of takes the fun out of, even like in band situations where you're performing, you have to kind of listen around. Different people, it doesn't matter what instrument, they're always sharing different ideas and doing little things that if you're not listening and you're just paying attention to yourself, you kind of miss the whole fun of it that's going on. Because musicians, although they won't talk or say what they're doing, they will express it in their music and just throw little cliches at you and that sort of thing. And that keeps the creative portion going because, you know, you hear something at that instant. And then all of a sudden, oh, okay, I heard that. Now let me, you know, either answer to it or continue it on through the music. So that's the fun part.
Oh, yeah, and audiences pick up so much. People are so smart. If they're coming to see a musical performance and they're listening to you, they're already smart. And they can pick up a vibe between musicians on stage. Sometimes I've seen some folks that are on a stage, and they forget that they have an audience. And it's cool that one musician, you know, is signaling to another, and somebody else picks up on a note and expands that, opens it up. But when you know that you've got love ready to come at you from the audience, and you feed off of that, and the audience can pick up how much you love them back, that's got to be a high.
Yeah, it is. I'm guilty of that myself. Sometimes I'll get so wrapped up into, not what I'm doing, but what's happening up on stage that I forget that the audience is there. And that's something I have to work on. And I try to, if I keep a conscious thought about it, when the audience is kind of quiet, then I have to keep a conscious thought about it. But sometimes the audience will just carry the whole concert or performance, it's a communication back and forth. Sometimes it's verbal, and sometimes it's not verbal, it's physical or whatever, But that does play a big part. You're definitely right.
Well, with you, you seem to be such a generous person anyway that probably the audience never knew that you were completely wrapped up in your guitar. They were just picking up a whole lot of love from those chords because it's just so wonderful to hear somebody who enjoys playing. Because, Ronnie, you've been around musicians. They have a gift in whatever it is that they do, and we have to point out to folks that you also play piano, but you know some people who are playing, and they've got the technique down, but they've lost the happiness in playing.
Yeah, that is true, where it becomes so technical. That you're right. You lose the feeling or, you know, you don't feel exactly what you're doing because you're expressing, you know, so much of your technique that you've studied or worked on for hours and hours and hours. But, you know, it will come out sounding straight as opposed to your feeling being involved in what you're doing. And the audience picks that up. The audience, you know, you don't have to play much to express feeling. Or your audience usually will pick up, you know, feeling from you. I never understood that, how that worked, but it does happen. So that I've seen, you know.
It's like osmosis.
Right. Yeah. Never understood how that worked, but it works.
It's really weird. How can you possibly articulate this osmosis of energy going back and forth?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, you know, this CD, I noticed some names, and I always have to ask about the names. And actually, this week I saw that you made it a big deal to thank Eric Copeland. And I knew the name Eric Copeland because he's done so much work with my friend Drew Davidson. So how how did you and Eric get to meet? Because that's a pretty cool association.
Well, when I set off to do this project, I kind of went around and I kind of looked at what other people were doing. I went from Drew's CD, his successful CD. I think it was I started this project 2 years ago. I went from him to Najee. I went around trying to find out what other guitarists were doing, who they were connecting with, and that sort of thing. And I still have that list. But I sent out emails to different producers, and I think Eric, if I remember correctly, Eric sent me an email back saying, hey, dude, give me a call. So I called him up, and we talked a little bit, and I kind of explained to him, look, I've got four or five CDs already under my belt, but I just don't think that it's doing what I, you know, wanted to do. Number one in sales, music-wise, that sort of thing. And I told him I really like what he did with Drew Davison CD. So he said, well, send me a couple of charts, and I'll take a listen to them, and we'll go from there. Well, I had sent him, I don't remember which tune it was, and he basically said, man, I think we can work together. This is good stuff. So I sent him my first chart, and I had put all the instrumentation together and using a software program, Pro Tools. He wrote back and he said, hey, do you have the chart written for any of this? I said, sure, I've got the chart written for pretty much everything. And I sent him the charts, and he got some guys together. He said, look, I've got some good guys that can play this for you. Why don't you check out what I've done? He said, I'm not going to make any changes. That's your songs. But check out, what I think from the producers in. So, and we went through that. 2 years later, we completed the CD.
Wow.
That's how the process went, yeah.
It's really fascinating to me how people get together, because when you hear a finished project, you many times think to yourself, wow, that sounded so, and here's my new word recently, and hopefully it won't get overused, and hopefully it's understood, but when things happen organically, not with any fuss or drama or extra fanfare, just a connection is made, and it just seems like things fall into place, and then they keep falling into place. The resulting project is just so natural. It just seems like it's supposed to be. And I don't know how you feel. I think that I know how you feel about Can't Stop Now. you really take a lot of pride in this because you feel as though it's a step above mostly anything you've done, don't you?
Yeah, I think it took a much better direction. I think that this one had, not to say the other ones didn't, but I think this one had more consistency in the music itself, which I kind of enjoyed.
Mm. And then you have the, did you know any of the guys that Eric brought in? Did you ask for any guys, or did you trust his judgment that he would get it together?
Yeah, he's mentioned to me that he had some very good guys that he'd like for me to use. And I actually went online and checked them out and that sort of thing, you know. But I think that probably happened like once or twice, you know, with maybe like the first two songs. Everything turned out so well, I let him run with it. And then we got to the last tune. I have done some projects using some of the Martin brothers, Andy and Scott. And I called them up. Those guys are from out of California. I remember I called Scott and I said, "Hey Scott, check this project out. I'd like to, you know, use you on this." He said, Sure. I'll get my brothers together and we'll do that. Scott actually plays sax he's doing the saxophone on My Funny Valentine, and all of the brothers are doing the last cut, Popped Off. So, you know, here we have the chance to work together again. But it's a lot of fun. We are, you know, when you use folks that you, you know, have built a relationship with, you kind of know, you know, what they're going to do, what they're going to sound like. And matter of fact, I remember when we were doing My Funny Valentine, Scott asked me if he should be reserved. I said, "No, man, be yourself. Just let it, you know, just let it fly. Do what you do." And he calls me up and he says, "I hope I didn't do too much on that one." I said, "No, are you kidding me, man? That was perfect." So he said, "Oh, okay, all right," that sort of thing. So, and I hope from this one, the musicians that were used, all of the guys that were used on this one, I hope this is just the start of a working relationship for the future.
Well, I can imagine your excitement, and I was excited for you because I know that you've been doing this for a while, and sometimes you can be doing something for a while, and then something amazing happens, and it seems to come out of the blue, and then it's just like a puzzle with the pieces all falling into place, and it just seems like you're going to get a lot of attention from this CD. I was really happy because I went to Amazon and I saw Ronnie Smith, Can't Stop Now, part of the new jazz releases, and I went, look at Ronnie. I love it. Because, you know, once you're based in Baltimore and then you see somebody else that's got Baltimore roots, that's something major is happening with them, you get really charged up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do the same thing, So, if it's not a charge, it's an inspiration. Hey, okay, yeah, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, man, well, this town is a big, fat music town. I'm from Philadelphia, so, I mean, that's another one. But Philly and Baltimore are two major towns for bringing forth this fresh, creative, constant. I mean, it's consistent. Whether it's jazz or it's rock or it's alternative anything, it just seems like this is the town where things are popping. So, can we play another track, Ronnie?
Yes, let's do it. Why not?
Let's do it. You mentioned Popped Off. I was going to leave that for last, but let's get into it because you didn't hold anything back on this. Man, it's in case folks, we're going to make sure we put a bookmark in that thought about making sure folks know where to go to buy this. But let's just listen right now to something from Ronnie Smith, our guest from Can't Stop Now. This is Popped Off on Hybrid Jazz. On the record and saying it should be illegal to have that much fun, okay? Seriously. You know that's true, Ronnie. Come on now.
yeah. That's energy from beginning to end. Goodness gracious.
God. I know. And isn't it wild when you hear it, when you hear it being played back and you go, oh, look, that was really good.
I listen to it driving when I pop the CD in the car while I'm driving sometimes, and I go, oh, man, can you do that twice? You know?
and you probably go sometimes, wait a minute, is that me?
yeah, I do. I was like, wow. It felt good that day.
Man, I'll bet you. Woo!
Yeah,
so, how, you know, you've got Baltimore roots. So where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in West Baltimore. I went to Bentlow Elementary, which is on Saratoga and Bentlow, right where they, right where Saratoga kind of dead ends and runs into Bentlow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I had gone to help WEAA, Morgan's radio station, to do their drive. And Sandy Mallory, I looked at her, I said, weren't we neighbors when we were growing up, you know?
Oh, wow.
She said, that was me. And I was like, wow, man.
Yeah, and in Baltimore, that's a common thread. I mean, you and I probably know so many cats who are doing music in common. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
I mean, and with the jam sessions, I mean, jam sessions are good in some ways and they're bad in others. It's great because so many people get together that normally wouldn't get together. But then again, in Baltimore, and maybe you can agree with this or not, Ronnie, but if you play a jam session for free in Baltimore, ain't nobody going to pay for you if you're doing a gig the next week.
Oh, shoot. They hardly pay for you now. It's really tough.
It is. And we've talked about this a few times on the show. In order for Baltimore methodology, the mindset in this town is that you make it if you've gone away and come back. If you stay here, it's like, big deal.
Yeah, it seems like that. You're right. It does seem that way, you know. And I'm really not one too much on jam sessions, but my problem is that it's always on nights that I know I have to get up early the next day and be productive. If I stay out too late, I am no good the next day.
Oh,
so
I understand.
It's just tough for me. Like a lot of them, I think, are on Monday nights and that sort of thing. So it makes it kind of tough. Because Tuesday, you know, is a tough day for me. That, you know, it's a day of meetings. I get asked questions, and if I'm null and void, I know I'm going to say the wrong thing.
Well,
so
you
I
know,
have to be on the, yeah.
Praise God that you've got a day job. So, you know, a lot of these folks do not, so they can be up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And now it just seems like there's jam sessions every day of the week.
Wow.
I just saw a new one. There's going to be a new one now on Thursday night. And I think that we've already had 3 cooking in town anyway. So does anybody show up at all of these or what? I don't know. Man.
Wow.
Yeah. And maybe that bodes well. I don't know. What do you think of the state of jazz these days?
To be honest, I think it's slowing up. Probably because, well, I mean, I look at the amount of radio stations that has changed their formats and have gone more commercial, you know, with those things that are according to, according to them, the numbers are here. You know, they post these numbers of what's selling, what's not, and everybody's trying to, you know, pay the rent. You know, so I guess jazz had a low score. It wasn't selling, and I remember when Clear Channel cleared out of Baltimore, and then not only Baltimore, but just started changing the format completely. And I think I remember going for radio promotion, maybe back in 2005 or so. There were like hundreds of stations, and I could be exaggerating a little bit, but there were quite a few stations that, you know, you could send your music to. And now there's probably, 50 to 75, you know, stations that are, you know, hanging on to contemporary jazz. I'm calling it smooth contemporary, but now, you know, in traditional jazz is even less, you know, so it's kind of scary.
Here's the thing, and you know, I haven't said this for a while publicly, but I'll say it now because it really does matter. The fact of the matter is that, and here's a scenario that happened at a country station where I was working in Baltimore some years ago, and this is the absolutely stupid kinds of thinking that people honestly get paid to mouth. We had a consultant, one of my least favorite words in the English vocabulary, we had a consultant come into the radio station to give us an overview of what we were playing. So we were playing a song because it was a so-called hit. I remember the song. It was called Nobody by Sylvia. The consultant said, oh, well, you're not playing that enough because it's a very hot record. You've got to be playing that like several times a day.
Wow.
We did. And then the consultant came back and said, oh, well, you got to stop playing that song. It's being burned out. duh. So this is the same sort of thinking with jazz in the United States of America. What we have is jazz on public radio stations. You never hear the jazz consistently because it's day-parted. You could be hearing jazz in the morning, then you're hearing news talk in the afternoon, and then you're hearing maybe sounds from Havana at night or Puerto Rico or something that's reggae-flavored. It's not consistent. It's not 24-hour commercial jazz. And that's the only... That's the only way to make money, Ronnie, is to make it a 24-hour-a-day commercial radio station. What happened with the smooth jazz stations is that a couple of people in power in Los Angeles, were given too much power. They dictated what was happening in Maine, in Houston, in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, in New Jersey, in Oregon. They were dictating to all of these people who said, yes, master, we'll do what you say. And that's why the smooth jazz stations died. And here's another reason why they died. It's because the people who were the mouthpieces for the smooth jazz stations wanted too much vanilla in the mix, if you know what I mean.
Right. Wow.
So yeah. There you have it in a nutshell. And now, honest to God, it will only take one station that does it right to make it right so that there's a whole bunch of other cities that will fall in line. People are saying, oh, jazz won't make it. If you do it right, baby, wait till you see how much money you'll make.
Yeah, right. You know, I remember this on the other hand, I remember artists, when I started listening to jazz way back when, artists, you know, didn't really let the stations dictate how they played their music. I think we've gone from 10-minute songs down to 3-minute songs.
Right.
There used to be, you know, artists would just be free with their writing and playing. And you know, we all enjoyed, you know, wow, man, did you hear how long that solo is? Nowadays, if you are able to sneak a solo into your song, you know, because, you know, radio now dictates pretty much how your writing should happen, you know, how you should prepare your music for radio instead of the listener. That's just my thought, you know. I'd rather, you know, have, I don't know, a symphonic piece in jazz where, you know, you have different movements and different feelings and it's all expressed in one song. But you can't do all of that in a couple minutes. But, you know.
Oh, no, Ronnie, you're absolutely right. And if people had a mix of what you're saying, if there was a radio station whereby actually people were putting down money for their commercials, I don't care what anybody says. Commercials are a necessary evil. They pay for a lot of what you hear on a station. If we had Ronnie Smith next to Wes Montgomery, next to a shimmering vocal, next to Miles Davis, next to, say, Gail Johnson and Jazz in Pink. If we had a mixture of some world jazz mixed with domestic flavor and then the right kinds of vocals, it would tear up terrestrial radio.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But it's not there. And like I said, it's fading. That's the scary thing. My next project, if I'm fortunate and blessed to do another project, I worry about which direction I should take it in. Where would airplay be for it? That sort of thing. So it's kind of scary. But at the same time, although it's scary, I don't think it's going to stop me from doing what I enjoy.
Oh, no, don't ever let it. And, whatever it is that you feel at the time, you've got to do it. Because if the music is not authentic, it's meaningless. I mean, why would anybody
right.
do it if it's not something that comes from your soul, you know?
That's true. That's right. Yeah.
Well, I want people to know about the educator part of you, because that is so cool. Tell us about somehow, some way we can support you in those efforts, because you've actually put out tutorials on how to play guitar.
Yeah, I wrote, and it's a conglomeration of material that helped me, and it's always, I don't know if you've ever had piano lessons or anything like that. Well, that was the toughest thing for me to get by, because it was so boring. You do one finger, two fingers, three fingers, at a time. But unfortunately, the boring part for, I think, learning any instrument is going to be there. I mean, you can sugarcoat it, put all kinds of spices on it, but it's still going to be there, and it's a hurdle that you got to get past to learn any instrument. So the actual project started, the book is called Essential Guide for Beginner Guitar. And I started trying to put material together for my daughter to kind of teach her how to play. I guess that lasted about 5 minutes. She just teased me and said, "Hey, never show me," because she's at that age, I guess, that, okay, that's enough. That's enough for me, whatever. But I'm hoping that it'll help some others, not just kids. I think adults could use it too. And then I kind of went through a lot of material that I used to use that kind of gave me ideas about jazz and where to go on the instrument. I put a lot of that material together, and I called that one Lessons in Jazz Guitar. So at the same time that I was working on the Can't Stop Now CD, I was also writing those two books of lesson material.
Wow.
So I kind of bailed out some of the musicians' friends and said, "Wow, man, you just left the earth for about 2 years." So we pretty much did. I did, but I got them done, and I think the material is real helpful, but it's not lick based. Like a lot of times I see folks that are trying to sell lesson material. Okay, I'm going to show you this lick, I'm going to show you that lick, but they don't show you how they came about that lick, or how you can expand on that lick, or expand on any of the material that they're showing you. I call it impressing you. Here's some impressive stuff that you can use, but you're at a dead end road after you learn that impressive material. So I figured I'd give it a shot and try to put together some things that would be more helpful to folks. And I thought about the education side of what kids could use and what would help them if they wanted to play in school bands, what they needed to know. If if no more than a starting point of material, then at least they would have something that they could say, okay, oh, I remembered, I studied that, so here it is now on a chart. So I can now play that because I've done that before. So my train of thought went in that direction, went in the direction of what I experienced. I experienced, like, high school bands. I think I mentioned that, the junior
yes.
high school band. And when, you know, your band director brings up a chart and you go, whoa, I don't know what that chord is. Matter of fact, what is that symbol? What, you know, that sort of thing. Then you're in a bad position. But so I put a lot of that material in the beginner's book, and I kept hinting over to advanced material just to help the kids or adults, whoever, it doesn't matter, if, you know, they wanted to advance their knowledge, or, you know, even if they were just somebody who just played at home. And, you know, nowadays you can go online and you can find a chart if you're not good with picking up a song by ear. you can go online, find the chart, but at least you'll be able to tackle that chart with some of the material, I hope, with some of the material that I put in the lesson books.
That is so awesome. And God, Ronnie, I really hope that kids or adults, but especially kids, with the lack of music education in schools these days, man, I hope that the kids who have it really appreciate it and appreciate your efforts, because that might mean a real difference between them enjoying the music education that they still have in their schools and being able
right.
to keep up with it after they leave school, because that's so important.
Right. It is. It really is. And then there's, you know, a lot of kids who can't afford, like, I know for me, I invested a lot during my little guitar playing missions. And because I wanted to learn, but it was a very expensive venture, you know. And I figured, okay, you know, not everybody's going to go out here and work two and three jobs to pay for their habit as I did, my musical habit. And I'm still doing it. I'm working so that I can pay for my musical habits.
I hear you. I hear you.
But not everybody, you know, has been that fortunate. So, like I said, I tried to put some of the things that I learned so basically they could cheat off my paper.
That's,
you know,
so
that's
cool. That's a good way of putting it, too. I never thought about it like that. But, you know, if you can save anybody these days as far as getting through school, because it may be harder than we ever remember to get through school these days. My son is 21, and he's in college, and we've gone through some blood, sweat, and tears trying to pass some of these acutely dramatic math classes, and then business English and computer courses. Forget it. Woo, Lord.
Oh, no. And one other thing, I was just thinking about it. When I was coming up, guitar was not a everyday instrument. I couldn't just walk down the street and just find somebody playing guitar. Now, you grew up in Philadelphia, and I really like the guitar scene in Philadelphia. I mean, I've got friends there that, you know, you've got the Mummers, and
those guys,
they get together and they play guitar. Five and six other guys, of course they do other things, but they, at least they get together and they play, you know, guitar. They're teaching each other guitar and that sort of thing. Now, where I grew up, if I wanted to learn the guitar, I either had to take a course in it somewhere or, you know, I'm back to, it wasn't, you know, a bunch of guys getting together and, hey, you know how to do this and, you know, that sort of thing. So the learning atmosphere was a little different. I mean, like, and I keep referring to Philadelphia because that is such a musical scene where, you know, and I know quite a few guys that get together, and it's not just guitar. There are instrument circles. There are folks that get together just to play the saxophone. They get together, you know, and they're learning from each other, that sort of thing. I think that was, and it's not an excuse, but I think that would have been a big thing if that was around. You know, I wouldn't have to go on this mission or excursion to learn to play that instrument. I'd like to see that for some of the kids that are coming up and playing guitar. You know, I wish we had that. Maybe that's something I could start. I don't know.
That's really interesting that you pointed that out. And, you know, you're right. This is another way of articulating it. In Philadelphia, there does seem to be a sort of intermingling of blue and white collar folks together who play music. And that may be the driving force of why Philly is so top of mind in the way of a music scene, because I remember even when I was little, growing up and knowing different pockets of different neighborhoods, and it was just not the neighborhood, but folks coming in from different parts of town to play with other people. So,
yeah,
that's pretty cool. Nobody's ever pointed out that before, Ronnie.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's done in Baltimore and that sort of thing. I guess the jam sessions are that sort of thing now, I guess. But it's jam sessions consist of still, you know, different instrumentalists getting together, where as opposed to, you know, five guitarists getting together or five saxophone players getting together or, you know, that sort of thing. And they're sharing ideas and teaching and, you know, that sort of thing. So they're making or creating an atmosphere for learning that particular instrument.
Yeah. That is another good point for these jam sessions, because it just is a very it's so wonderful, I can't even describe it, but when you have a handful of drummers or a handful of sax people or guitarists who come together, and then you realize that you have so much more in common than you've ever had to worry about as far as, ooh, so-and-so is more talented than me. Everybody's got something different they bring to the table, you know? And that's once that stands out in your mind as being a truism, woo, that's a big revelation.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it really is. So,
well, you've learned so much, and it's just been so wonderful to have you. I can't believe that in, like, an hour pretty much has gone by.
Wow, neither can I wasn't really paying attention to the time.
Isn't that crazy?
So much fun talking to you. Yeah.
It really was. And what do you want to see happen now with Can't Stop Now? Which, by the way, I played Lionel Richie earlier from 1983, and of course that was the name of his album from back then, Can't Stop Now. So I thought it was pretty cool that you named your CD that too.
Yeah. Well, whatever it did for Little Richie, I hope it does the same thing for me.
Hey, listen, he's going to be on the Today Show tomorrow. So he's going to, in the next couple of days, he's going to turn 64. He's looking good. He's taking care of himself. He's got a second wind. It can happen to anybody.
Yeah. Keep my fingers crossed. I caught myself. I said Little Richie. I meant Lionel Richie.
Well, you know what? I'm just going to call him Little Richie from now on. Enjoy that. But, Lionel Richie. And I don't ever ask anybody's ages who does the show. I freely admit to my age. But any time that I know that there is somebody like you who is a seasoned performer who has been doing his or her thing for such a long time, it's always exciting, especially when you come from a background that was you said the word religious background. When you are steeped in a certain kind of spiritual tradition, then you bring that to your music, then you get classically trained, and then you hear also all the sounds of what turned you on to an instrument, and you name Joe Pass as one of your inspirations and Wes Montgomery and George Benson, you bring all of that to the table, you have somebody who knows what the heck they're doing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm trying. I never try to rank what I've learned, or rate, I should say, what I've learned and put it into a category, you know, because there's still so much to learn. I think if I had it all together, I'd never go back in my basement and practice again. But, I notice if I don't practice, I have to spend twice as much time in there. So there's always something to learn.
Mm. Yep. Yeah. You got to make sure you keep those fingers well muscled.
Yeah. Well old.
Well oiled. Yes. Well, you sure did that with Can't Stop Now. And we talked about
Thank
this
you.
Earlier in the hour, but Browntown owns my heart now. I love that song.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
You want to do a little explaining about Browntown, Ronnie Smith?
Yeah, well, I can. Actually, I listen to each song I write. I try to get ideas or from different artists on which direction I want to take it. So this particular cut, I think I was listening to Norman Brown, a couple of his songs, and I said,
oh,
I want to hear it. I like what he did. And of course I did it in my style as opposed to Norman's style. He has such a great style.
Oh,
And that's pretty much how this came about. I just listened to some of the things that he was doing, some of the chord progressions, and I was like, okay, that's kind of cool, but what if I did this instead of that? And that's pretty much how it came out.
He would be so tickled to hear you say that. He would really flat out be flabbergasted.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. Well, we'll have to figure out a way to tell him in the next month or so, because he's now doing a little tour with Kirk Whalum and Company. So.
Oh, wow.
He's got his second win now, too, so... We'll figure out a way to bring him on the show, and I'll talk about you while he's with me.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I've never heard of him.
Oh, look, he's going to know about you shortly. A lot of people are. And I wish you all the best success with Can't Stop Now, Ronnie. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much as well.
Well, good. I'll see you down the road. People can keep up with you and buy the CD from, is it ronniesmith.com?
Mm-hmm. R-O-N-N-Y, smith.com. And
cool.
There's links for the educational portion as well. So, or shoot me an email, and there's contact. Shoot me an email, if no more than just to say hi, and I will respond.
Awesome. That's great news. Well, I'll see you down the road one of these days soon, I promise.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Ronnie. Thank you so much. We'll see you soon.
Okay, take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Ronnie Smith, man, that was nice. Woo! This is nice, too, from Can't Stop Now, Browntown. I love it. On Hybrid Jazz. That is Rory Block from Tornado from 1996. And every time that I have a chance since that album came out, which is a phenomenal album anyway, but that song very specifically called Gone Woman Blues, if there has been a chance through the many years that I've been on the radio to play that song and make sure you know why Rory wrote it, I do. So I wanted to play the song with enough distance between now and the 12th of June so that you wouldn't have it overwhelm you as you were getting toward that date. But Rory wrote it so that she could honor the memory of Nicole Brown Simpson, who was murdered on June the 12th, 1994, with her friend Ron Goldman. Much can be said about that. There was an opportunity last year to maybe talk to Denise Brown, Nicole's sister, but Denise, unless it's very specific circumstances, she still doesn't like to talk about it all that much, although there is a Nicole Brown Foundation so that women can seek guidance in an anonymous way if they feel as though their life is in danger. For many women, it comes too late, and that is the case with Nicole and Ron. And just like to make sure that people know that Rory felt compelled to write that song. Didn't have to have words, just the vocalization and playing her blues guitar. She is mad, crazy good with that blues guitar, an award winner multiple times through the years. One of these days it would be cool to have her on the show just to give her take on the world in general. She's very interesting. Many years ago she was on QVC and had a chance to visit with her and just had one of my girl crushes going on because she's just like a goddess. She really is. Long hair and a lot of revelations about life and music and where her roots are. She grew up with her dad letting people take advantage of him to a certain extent. He had a sandal shop in Greenwich Village, so Rory would see all these fabulous musicians come back and forth, Dylan and Joan Baez and all the folks that were back in the folk scene back then, and she just got immersed in music, and that's one of the results. She's brilliant. We also heard from our wonderful guest, Ronnie Smith from Can't Stop Now, Brown Town. And I do not want to leave you on a sad note. We're going to play one song, and we're stopping the show a little bit early so Mama Bear can get her car situated. So I wanted to play just something light and breezy and not fraught with meaning for my friend Beige, because she's going to start back on her work career on Monday. And now we've got the troops gathered. We've got Griselda and Yolanda and Matt and BJ and some guests floating back and forth. So it's a good time to play one of Ronnie's influences, George Benson and Breezin' from the 70s. Lighten things up a little bit on Hybrid Jazz. There he is, one of the biggest things that ever happened to George Benson from 1976, Breezin'. Thank you so much for listening today. We're wrapping things up a little early, and we'll see you Tuesday. Expect some magic and some surprises. Can't really say right now. We'll have to wait, okay? I'll keep you posted on Facebook. God bless. Have a great weekend. Good luck, and God bless you at work, BJ. Yay! We'll see you on Tuesday, God willing, on Hybrid Jazz.